Hey guys, I appreciate you guys listening to our anniversary show last week. I think it was great. And if you didn't, please, it's our annual tradition. Since our first episode was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the nice kind of bodysuit 80s version, to do one a year. And we did Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3, Turtles in Time, and we survived. So I guess in kind of those ways, we're doing another throwback to 80s and 90s cartoons. But we want to hear from you. What TV show movies should we do? What made for TV ideas do you have? How can we expand your interest in our show? This week on Myopia Defend Your Childhood, we learned that really, really good Batman movies came out between Batman Returns and Batman Begins. They just happened to be animated. We watched Batman Mask of the Phantasm. DC is so great, they'll never screw up Batman again, right? Right?
This Christmas, for the first time, America's most exciting and legendary motion picture hero comes to the screen like you've never seen him before.
The Bat!
In an all-new, larger-than-life feature film. Now, the Dark Knight confronts his newest and most menacing villain.
Your angel of death awaits.
The Phantasm.
I want you.
And faces his greatest danger.
Can't be too careful with all those weirdos around.
A soaring new adventure. Batman, Mask of the Phantasm. The animated movie. Coming for a Christmas you'll never forget.
Monster Sci-Fi Show Podcast delivers the latest sci-fi news, plus movie and TV reviews with brilliant and insightful commentary. If you haven't listened to the Monster Sci-Fi Show Podcast before, you will listen to the Monster Sci-Fi Show Podcast now.
What, do you think you're some kind of Jedi waving your hand around like that?
Watto, I'm telling everyone to listen to the Monster Sci-Fi Show Podcast.
No, they won't.
Yes, they will, including you.
No, they won't. I'm a Tidarian. Mind tricks don't work on me. Only money.
Okay, I don't have money, but please listen to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. Sci-fi, from a certain point of view.
Welcome to Myopia Defend Your Childhood. This week, we watched Batman Mask of the Phantasm, everyone's favorite precursor to the Animaniacs movie, Wacko's Wish. I'm Nick Hoffman, editor-in-chief of Dude Letter, slash head of Dude Letter Podcast. And on panel this week, we have...
Hello, this is Daniel, and I was a superhero for about 2 weeks back in 1995.
I'm just Cliff.
This is Thomas Herman of the Geekly Oddcast and the Brothers Herman.
Matthew W. Quinn, webmaster of the world according to Quinn.
All right, guys, so if you're listening to this, it's because you have good taste, and I like each and every one of you. Or you're Madison's mom, and I just know you by name. Hi, how are you doing? Here's the thing. This week, a movie came out called Suicide Squad. Problem is, it takes the characters we know and love, like Harley Quinn and the Joker, and... turns them into Margot Robbie. And I have nothing against Madame Robbie. But the problem is, it takes the joy out of interesting characters. So we thought, since we've done the original Batman series from 89 to 95, or 97 rather, we would look into the movie and TV show we grew up on. And I think Batman the Animated Series influenced my opinion of Batman as much as when Jack Nicholson is laughing in a dentist chair. So we decided we would do this one,
And if you guys respond well to it, which I hope you do, we might come back for either Sub-Zero or Return of the Joker from Batman Beyond.
Ooh, Return of the Joker was good.
But before we get too far into this...
The director's cut one or the...
Yeah, the director's cut one.
And if you guys like it, please let us know, because we're going to also have this summer The Killing Joke. And this won't come out in time for that, but if you like it... We'll do something in response to The Killing Joke. How about that? Before we get too far into this, it's been a while, but Thomas, would you like to give us a plot summary?
This is basically kind of a rendition of Batman Year One, Year Two with a Paul Dini, Bruce Timm twist on it. We basically kind of get a bit of Batman's origin story along with a more modern, you know, basically a present day along with a new villain that has arisen, the Phantasm, who's never mentioned by name in the entire movie.
Nope.
And the Phantasm is going around and killing mobsters. And basically, we also jump back and kind of see what leads Batman to be Batman, like without having to redo the death of his parents, which is actually kind of nice. So we can refresh that again. And just kind of move forward. I think we can kind of just jump off from there.
Good. And I have a question off the bat, and I don't want to out anyone. But Matt... but the thought here is, you're more of a Marvel person than a DC person.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. But... I did turn to Seinfeld. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But... How do you relate to this Batman the Animated Series, and how did you like this?
Well, I do remember watching it as a kid, although it was not my regular show. I do remember a couple episodes pretty well, and I never saw Mask of the Phantasm. I don't know if it was... My parents tend to be pretty conservative about movies, so I don't know if I wasn't allowed to see it or if I just wasn't interested.
Were they traumatized by the scene where the Joker gets a tooth knocked out, or...?
No, they just probably would have thought it was scary, because not that long before was... I was a five-year-old who wanted to see Arachnophobia and Gremlins 2.
What's wrong with showing a five-year-old Gremlins 2?
The parents that thought it would give me nightmares, and, you know, they'd be the ones being kept up at night by... me being terrified.
That's understandable.
So I don't remember this movie. I mean, I remember getting curious about it a few years ago and looking it up to see what it was about, but I never saw it until now.
Don't get me wrong. I didn't either, which shocks me because, you know, between Animaniacs, Power Rangers, and this show, that was pretty much my 90s.
Childhood, right?
Yeah. Right. And don't get me wrong, I've already talked to Thomas about doing Power Rangers when that comes out in 2017.
Bryan Cranston as Zordon.
Well, that movie made
and the world's most stripperific Rita Repulsa.
Hey.
Painted green.
I am not repulsed by that at all.
No.
But the reason I like this panel is not just because I love all of you people, especially Thomas, who's having a conniption right now, but it's because... This is a slice of the 90s through and through. I mean, I love the Art Deco style, the very minimalist animation style that holds up so well. Because for a show, I mean, you look at animated movies now, and even the Killing Joke is pulling from this, but there's so many more lines. This is so minimal, and it's almost Microsoft Paint, and yet...
Oh, yeah, there's some obvious matte paintings and some real blocky CGI.
And the part
that
has...
Well, this is 1993, and it was a 2D cartoon. I mean, I can understand blocky CGI.
Oh, yeah, but Great Mouse Detective did a really good job mixing up...
Yes, but this wasn't a Disney budget.
This had the budget of literally three episodes of the show.
Yeah.
And to Matt's point, though, there's a point where they're at an old campground, or an old festival ground, carnival ground, and Batman's running up a fake... rocket, and the part that's going to break away is a different color, so you know it's going to break away because there's the matte painting, and then there's the part that they're actually animating, it's a different texture.
Yep.
But even so,
that would explain why a lot of time, I remember seeing a kid different colored things in cartoons, that would explain it if they have a still painting and only one animation.
Oh yeah.
They layer the print, so the background is one, and then the things that, the cell that move are on top, and they often can't emulate the thing, and that's why if you watch certain episodes, like even The Simpsons, which was hand-drawn, it literally looks like Bart is jumping off the screen. It's because there's a half inch of ink. But Cliff, what were you saying?
But even so, I was about to say, it didn't really distract me too much. It all seemed to fit into the world because it had such a unified aesthetic that was
once more revolutionary from the 90s. I said, I grew up with this as a kid. The Art Deco style, the darker storylines of Batman. I was watching it today and thinking, how many kids' TV shows can get away with that level of gunplay nowadays? And violence.
And the thing is, it's not only gunplay and violence, it's that I think sometimes vagary in animation allows us as adults to fill in the gaps much more. And when you have something much more highly textured and complete, you know what happens. Mm-hmm. This is somewhat darker because it's not just that it's shady and it's this like Art Deco, almost gothic feel. It's that nothing happens on screen, really. Like when Joker gets punched in the face, like Matt alluded to, and the tooth flies away, we don't see it. Like the blood is almost orange. It's very visceral.
Yeah.
It feels much more real in some
way. Well, I think the best part was that gag they had that was a tribute to the old 30s and 40s Warner Brothers production where Batman walks by a crate and the Warner Brothers logo is stamped onto the side of it. That was amazing.
Well, and I love the inherent humor of the Joker isn't involved, so someone appeals to him for help, and so Joker's like, it's my deal now, Bats. And so he makes things much worse.
Well, finally explains where he gets the money for all his insane schemes. He's probably some kind of super hitman.
Well, and he's embezzling it because it turns out he was part of the business with Salvatore.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's, in fact, in some ways, he's the one that keeps turning the screws to Andrea, who's the wild card here. So, in the end, this movie is a dichotomy piece. Bruce Wayne had his parents killed, which, like Thomas said, thankfully they don't reshow for the thousand million billionth time, which is why it's better than anything Spider-Man ever did. And he got bitter, but he wanted to bring out the best in himself by solving crime forever. Andrea, her father was squeezed by the mob and eventually is killed by the Joker. And what does she want? Well, she wants revenge.
Well, Batman, proto-Joker, the Joker before he became the Joker.
Which is interesting.
Which was a fun little bit gag right there.
Yeah, they're going with, I guess, the original, the Red Hood storyline as opposed to the Killing Joke. Yeah.
Well, the Killing Joke was the Red Hood storyline.
No, the Red Hood originally was a criminal himself. The Killing Joke was he was some engineer who got bullied into going along with it.
By dressing up as the Red Hood.
They go with the idea as a Red Hood as a career criminal, not as some bonehead.
Well, it's more the Jack Nicholson Joker where he had a long criminal history beforehand. Right. It was a fun gag either way, though.
Yeah.
I still think like the scene where Bruce is at his parents' tomb, like, you know, or tombstone, and he's just begging to have a regular life. Like,
oh, yeah.
That scene is, I mean, I can't imagine putting that into a kid's cartoon. It just...
Nowadays, it just
would
not be
done. No, it's not that it wouldn't fly. It's just no one would think to do it, to be like, oh, that's too deep, or we'll just put that in a movie. I mean, just... And there's genuine anguish there, and it's...
Oh, nowadays, if you see a lot of media for kids, I think there's a lot of underestimation of kids. Maybe it's shorter attention spans with smartphones and all that, but back then, they didn't underestimate. They realized I could do good quality work that would appeal to a wide range of ages, even if it was aimed at the kid demographic. You know, they didn't take them for granted or underestimate them.
Thanks, Clinton.
Well, I mean, at the time, that's what the Batman comics were and all comics were. They were supposed to be all dark and dreary, and that's why, you know, they kill off Superman or they break Batman's back for however long that was. So they were moving with the trend because that was popular, and I think they realized there was a cross demographic between the two.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is a nerdy reference, but if you guys watch, I think it's on Amazon now, the Batman animated show.
Mm-hmm.
It ran for 5 seasons, but by season 4, they had run out of money, so they cheapened the animation significantly. But
tie it with Superman.
Yeah. But in season 4, there was an episode where it's a little bit in the future, and the kids are talking about who they think Batman is. And the first guy's like, well, I think Batman is this kind of gritty warlord fighting against the mafia, and it's literally Batman The Dark Knight Returns, the Frank Miller one. And the second one's like, no, that's crazy. I think it's this. And it turns into the Neil Gaiman one. And then this guy shows up with this pink feather boa, and he's like, and he comes out of his dad's shop, and his dad is a shoemaker. And he's like, I think Batman is this guy with a huge codpiece, and he runs around with these visible nipples the whole time. And they're like, Joel, shut up.
It was. I know exactly the scene he's talking about. It's amazing.
It's wonderful.
It's got Joel Carrie Schumacher. Kelly as one of the kids. It's great.
See, the thing is, this came out in the mid-90s. 89, we have Batman, which is this wonderfully gritty version of the Joker, and it's bleak, but he thinks the world is funny, and it's beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. The second one is even darker, and the second one is a world with literally without color, and Batman's not in it. That's why it's so bleak. I mean, literally, Batman barely is in that movie. And then Joel Schumacher shows up.
Technicolor Batman.
And I mean, and I like Batman Forever because of this place in my heart as a kid. And it's so, but it is. It's all humor and no substance. This is literally the direction Batman could have gone. Because mm-hmm. it comes out in between them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's right there. And it just says, you know, Chris Nolan is this hero for resurrecting Batman. Oh, no, 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 no. In the comics and in the animated world, he was this emotionally torn character, and we have it here. He could have been the Phantasm.
Well, Christopher Nolan also doesn't know how to pronounce Ra's al Ghul's name, so there's also that.
I thought it was going to be Talia. This literally could have been Talia al Ghul.
Yeah, it would have been wonderful.
That would have been good. Speaking of which, we haven't talked about Andrea Beaumont too much. I mean, this is the first time she ever appeared in anything, right?
To Tim and Denny's credit, they create excellent characters. And Harley Quinn is one of them. I wish she was in this, but she's not, for good reason. And Andrea Beaumont. So who's Andrea Beaumont?
She was one of Bruce Wayne's partners, and eventually he proposed to her, but she turned him down because she and her dad had to escape and escape the country due to mob debts. And then suddenly, however many years later, when Bruce is the Batman, she comes back.
And
she knows.
She knows.
Yes, she knows.
This is the weird part.
Yeah, that one amateur mistake Batman makes. He just shows up at his parents' tombstone and just has to go genuflect before it when Andrea is there. And so she sees Batman
at the
Wayne tombstone, and she knows Bruce can intervenes in crimes and beats up criminals. So she's
It's a nice bookend because there's that scene earlier when she's talking to her mom's tombstone.
Well, it humanizes them both because, again, the idea that you can be a vigilante is so inherently flawed as a characteristic, right? Because it shows that you, on one hand, believe in the system but don't believe in the system. And that's what Batman's eternal struggle is. It's why his relationship to Commissioner Gordon and even Bullock is so important, because he fundamentally believes that the system should work, can work, and there are good people within it. But corruption can corrupt anyone.
I do love that Gordon basically kind of walked out of a good chunk of this movie. He's like, we're going to take down the Batman. And he's like, yeah, not with my help, you're not.
Nope. Because they think the Batman's killing all those Abe Vigoda gangsters.
Yeah, I think this movie does a good job explaining why the Gotham Police Department tolerates Batman. Because he doesn't kill anyone. He just beats people up and delivers them to the police department. But now they think he's killing somebody. We're going to shoot up half the city to get him.
Well, and to Matt and Thomas's point, what's interesting is by the time Gordon leaves, the evidence actually does point to it being Batman, and Gordon literally cannot handle it, so he literally walks out of movie town, right?
Yeah.
Bullock is the one who has to see for his own eyes, and when it turns out that they might have actually killed Batman at one point, Bullock is the one who responds.
He looks horrified at first. Like, did we really just shoot him up?
Did we really literally
just
break
kill
this
Batman?
Myth? Yes, that's exactly right.
So the one thing, because that scene where they're shooting up the construction site is very reminiscent of Batman Year One, where the SWAT tries to go in, and SWAT in Batman Year One were nuts. They were corrupt. But,
well, they were all paid by the mob.
Oh, yeah. The one thing that was missing, which kind of would have been like the glorious endpoint to do and wasn't necessary, would have been to follow with Batman Year One, where there were some SWAT inside as the explosion starts to go and he gets them out. Because that was one of the things he ended up doing, was because he didn't kill people. I mean, just...
You were referencing some of the origins earlier and how it's thankfully this time we didn't have the traditional origin story.
Yeah.
I actually think even though it was much truncated in this, I think it was actually one of the more effective origin stories for Batman 2. They cut out all the stuff. We already know the parents. You know, we don't need to see that again. That's already been referenced in the series. It shows us the important stuff.
Him
struggling as like, okay, I'm going to try to be a little crime fighter. He has his one little exploit. He finds his love. And once more, it has that climactic moment at the under the thunderstorm, his parents' grave. He's begging me, I never expected to be happy. Please, can you let me go? He's having a psychological internal battle with himself against the inanimate, but yet overpowering and overbearing Tombstone. Yep. It was great cinematography. And of course, it has Shirley Walker's great score coming up. Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
I've said it before, as you were referencing, but this is definitely my favorite incarnation of Batman. And I think it further escalated when the same creative team were able to do the video games. Mm-hmm. It created sort of the ideal of the Batman world, what I always thought about. I was never big into comics growing up, but I watched this show every day after school, and in this movie, all the elements seemed to come together.
Well, and I was sitting next to you, so I'm going to poke you to keep storytelling, but I think the part that created Batman we see as well, because he pulls the cowl on.
That moment,
when Alfred looks freaked out by seeing the mask for the first time.
He realizes what he has become and how far he's fallen, just what this monster has become inside of him.
No, I was going to say, it's literally Alfred as Frankenstein seeing the monster walk for the first time.
That he's helped create in a way.
Because like it's done entirely in silhouette. He pulls the cowl on over the, you know, the armor and the tights, and he's just like, the monster walks. And it's done without words. It's done completely in the score, and you realize
it's just music and the Art Deco style and the shadows. I mean, perfect. Mm-hmm. It was great. Well,
and it complicates the story because if it in a simpler narrative, in back when it was Detective Comics in the 40s and 50s, what creates Batman is this very simple idea of justice. No, in this, it takes the idea of Batman's parents dying, creating anger. It's his opportunity to love again that creates vengeance, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's not until he puts the cowl on and becomes Batman that he actually feels that, like, that there's that's a different moment than the rage to fix the problem.
Mm-hmm. I think more than that is the scene where Andrea calls off the engagement with him with that simple note, because that's the one time he felt as Bruce Wayne he could be happy. So now it's no longer a sense that of vengeance or a sense of justice, he has to do it because he has nothing else in his life.
As he was struggling with the whole time, it was the idea of love and someone to come home to. That was the only thing that could possibly stop him from going down this darker path. But once he had that, he realized he'd give up all commitments and all attachments and just become this spirit of vengeance and this force of nature.
And and some of it will, I'm sure, end in as a tag, but we were talking about the difference between Batman and Superman. This is... like, the interesting thing about the two of them, and it's why it works in World's Finest, is they both struggle with humanity. This is Bruce Wayne struggling with humanity more than anything. Like, and it's so intriguing because you watch the Chris Nolan movies. He cribs much more from this than you realize. It's all about humanity. Yeah. It really is. Like, I mean, it's not just that there's that scene in the garage in The Dark Knight, which they crib almost directly from this. Yeah. But it's also that... whoever Bruce Wayne is, he loses that tentative grip on humanity when he becomes Batman. And you get glimpses of it. And when you get glimpses of it, it's when he's the most of an actual hero. It's when he, at the end, realizes that if he doesn't sacrifice himself to be, you know, to say Batman is a villain at the end of Dark Knight, that Gordon loses his family. Like, you know, like that moment is important. Here we see it from him being a stubborn late teen, early like 20s guy to being Batman who's in his like mid-30s to early 40s. There's so much humanity in those brief moments that it's really rough to kind of wrap your mind around. It's incredible.
Well, I mean, I love when he meets Anna Beaumont in the graveyard.
Andrea,
I mean, and they're walking out, and she goes, "You don't strike me as, you know, the billionaire, you know, Wayne boy or something like that. You look like somebody who's constantly ready to jump out a window."
Yeah. I mean,
and just calls him flat out that he does look like he's just ready to take off. And
what do we think? Now, we've talked a lot about, I think, of Batman and Andrea and how they complemented each other. But what do we think of the Joker showing up in this? You know, the definitive Mark Hamill version, which everybody worships at this
delightful
point.
Delightful
as always. Oh, yes.
It's some of the subtle moments, like when he's talking about, "Oh, hi, honey, I'm home." He tears some of the skin off, just stares and examines it, and like puts it in his pocket for later. It's subtle little things like that that just up the creepiness.
I always liked his dialogue of him calling Batman Babe or Boopy or whatever.
Bootsy, or
Boopsy.
Well, I think a lot of times the obvious, you know, "Hey, Tootsie," was talking to Andrea, but in one scene he does talk about how cute Batman is.
Oh, that happens all the time in the comics.
Yeah, I mean, they're
he feminizes Batman
all the time.
Well, and it's the other side of them. Like, Joker wants nothing more than chaos, and so he's willing to destroy the system. Batman realizes he wants order, but he has to work outside the system to get it. Like, and so they realize that they're yin and yang. They're like, and it's so funny because you're like, oh, the Joker just loves him. No, no, no. Batman loves him just as much in some ways. Like, and we referenced the Killing Joke before. We'll reference it again. But at the end, they laugh together because there's this there's this shared moment of humanity. The Joker is nothing but chaotic evil. Batman's nothing but chaotic good. Well, if you've played your Dungeons and Dragons.
In the Killing Joke, though, it was both of them, when they were laughing together, was the last moment that they realize that they're both sane for that one brief moment.
That, yeah.
And I they're mean, the only ones who can relate to each other in that sanity.
If they're going to end up, one of them is going to kill the other. It was this full just realization, like...
But, I mean, so we should get into this. So the idea is, fundamentally, there are these three guys who are in a business deal along with Andrea Beaumont's father.
There's these guys.
Yeah, it's very...
Sounds like a money laundering kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's money involved, and then it turns out into an extortion racket.
Mm-hmm. And one of them is Abe Vigoda with an oxygen mask.
And one of the enforcers, we don't know exactly who he belongs to per se, but is the Joker, who's the name we don't get. And it's so intriguing that Andrea knows who Batman is, but at the end, we still don't know who the Joker is.
Well, Andrea sees the Joker before he became the Joker, so she knows who both of them are.
She knows exactly who he is. But at the end of the movie, Batman thinks they're both dead, and they are not.
Speaking of the ending, I like how that resolved, too. I thought that was a perfect way to do it. It would have been easy to just let it be up in the air or make you think that they both died. Once more, you don't know what happened to Joker. He always seems to survive.
Yeah.
But it was interesting doing with Andrea. It wasn't that she just sacrificed herself and fell to it. She did actually get her vengeance. She did her job. But look how empty she was at the end. She's at some party boat. She has her millions. And she's standing there with a dark veil. Hey, baby, you want to hang around? Or are you sorry, do you want to be alone? I am alone. She's just going to live a life of meaningless sex. You
that's
know?
The point where she's become Bruce Wayne, basically. Yeah. That's
but
what
no,
that
Bruce
is.
Win without the purpose, like she had already fulfilled her purpose, and who fell too deep into the chasm and didn't have that sort of guiding light, mediating light.
Well, I thought
she didn't
that's
have
the
an
whole
Alfred.
Point with Bruce Wayne, though, is he doesn't really have the purpose anymore after Andrea left him and broke off the engagement. He no longer had that, so she was in the same place
but
he was.
Well, he has the purpose to save Gotham. I'm talking about her one sole focus of becoming the Phantasm was to get the vengeance for her father and for taking away her life.
I agree, and I think it's interesting how they assembled this, because the Joker is just happy with the chaos. I mean, we get this whole thing that he's been the one turning the screws, and he's the one who ultimately kills her father, and like there's this anger in her about it, but it's not. It's very much the same way that Heath Ledger plays it. He doesn't care about the money. He just wants the chaos.
No, I do love that. I mean, yeah, you have the Joker. He's basically your hitman, and he eventually becomes the prime villain because all the rest are dead. But your original ones, the ones that killed her father, who caused them to run away, it's the mob.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not crazy people. It's not the insane, which is very typical Batman, is just somebody crazy who's gone off on a, you know, this vendetta or such. No, it's sane people just going out and committing crime. It's kind of this wonderful setup. And then they bring the Joker into it. Mm-hmm. And it...
Well, and it's because it's the exact opposite of Batman's way, because Batman generally is okay with the mob, not because he likes it, but because they believe in order. He is afraid of chaos. And I mean, and so like he doesn't like Marconi or Falcone or any of those guys. But at the same time, he's not going to be the one to bring him to prison because the chaos is more dangerous to him. The Joker represents that wild. He's the Joker.
Yeah, it wasn't in one version of Batman's story, the killing of Thomas Wayne was a mob hit because Thomas had foiled a robbery. But most of the time, most versions of it, it was a random street mugging. Gangster types don't really like that kind of thing, especially in their neighborhoods.
Well, didn't Thomas at one point save Falcone's son? Wasn't that one of the big things?
Well, and I mean, not to spoil anything about Gotham, because it's a great show, you guys should watch it, but the whole thing, it was that Wayne was the good guy, but he still had to deal with the mob. Like, there were these two big mob families. Wayne was not a mobster, and he treated things pretty straightforward, but...
You lived in Gotham.
But you lived in Gotham. You play the game. You play the game. And, you know, if anyone... The police, everyone understands that, and people like Zaz and the Joker are wild cards that could disrupt the system. And that's why people like the Penguin are dangerous, because they don't play like normal mobsters. Here we get that in spades, because, I mean, you don't take out Al Capone because you hate him. You take out Al Capone when he becomes dangerous and kills all the other mobsters, because then the mobs are in chaos.
It's about business, not
very
pleasure.
Godfather. Yeah. Yeah,
it is. It's very Godfather.
It's not personal, just business.
Mi casa nostra es su casa. That's
right. Yeah, I got, you see that line where the Joker calls Valestra Paisone?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Well, and then clever. He makes the joke that Thomas made, yeah. Which is a mafia joke. Like, it's interesting. And I leaned over to panelist Scott, who was here when we watched this, that you have this moment where the movie wants to be both 1930s and 1990s.
And that's the aesthetic that works so well, though. And
the cop cars that are this old, like the old
timey, like the TVs
are all in black and white.
You could see a paddy wagon going by and you wouldn't be surprised. No.
They have like AR-15s and assault rifles on the SWAT team at the same time.
But the guys have
these.
Tommy guns.
Yeah, Tommy guns. I love it. I love it.
Well, and I did love the world of tomorrow. The very Epcot / Tomorrowland from Disney.
I did love that when the robots broke down, when the Joker came out initially as they were going off, it was the sound of the Millennium Falcon breaking down in Epcot.
Yeah. That's right. That probably wasn't a deliberate reference. That's just a pretty
common...
Oh,
are you kidding? Well, it's 20th Century Fox. I'm sure. They had one breaking sound. I'm half surprised it wasn't a door opening and a caco demon came out, because that's the other set of sounds that they used for everything back. Like, I mean,
or
I love it.
Or we didn't hear a Wilhelm screamer.
As though, like, Eugene from Bob's Burgers just had a synth with all the sound effects that he had. He just walked down the soundboard.
Beef scotch.
Oh, I love it. That's great. But yeah, so at the end, it turns a little bit into the Killing Joke, not the plot, but the idea that Joker has taken over the world of tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Quite literally.
And it's interesting because it's another dual shot where at the beginning we have this flashback where Bruce Wayne is taking Andrea on a date and they take the little ride and it's all the world of the future. And she's like, do you think this is really going to be the future, Bruce? Because women in Batman... if they're not superheroes, have very dumb dialogue. To be fair, though, everyone has dumb dialogue unless they're Batman.
Yeah.
I do like the scene where he looks at the future car, and it's literally the Batmobile, but it's red. Mm. And he's like, what are you looking at, Bruce? The future.
Well, should we go ahead and spoil the ending?
We've spoiled about everything. Yeah. I guess spoilers for something that came out 20 years ago, but yeah, go ahead.
All right, the fact that Andrea is the Phantasm and not her dad like Bruce Wayne suspected the entire time. I mean, and she reveals it in the world of tomorrow. I think that was kind of a revelation, too, because that's the sort of world that this place is built up. Everybody has to adapt in that way or die.
Yeah. I love that Joker figured it out. Yeah. Like, I mean, obviously he knew... her dad was dead, but the fact that just the point it calls the Phantasm lady Phantasm, or not late, but just lady, and it's just kind of like you're
tougher than I thought, lady. I mean, it goes
was
to show.
Was that Marlon Brando doing the Joker? What was that?
That was close. It was close.
I heard it in there.
I'm so good, guys. no, but to me, it's even better than that, because she's only been around as the Phantasm for 3 weeks or whatever, mm-hmm. a month. Bruce Wayne has been Batman for years at this point, which makes you realize that literally the Joker must not want to know who Batman is. That's... right? And that comes up in the comics again and again, but that's what it must mm-hmm. be, because he's like, I could know if I want, but...
it would spoil the fun.
It would ruin the game.
Well, that's why I thought
comics the Joker knew that Bruce Wayne was Batman. No. He just thought that Bruce Wayne was the mask and Batman was the...
it might depend
person.
On which comic interpretation.
Well, I did. Yeah. I always love, because when you go into the comics and you have the Riddler, eventually, occasionally keeps figuring it out. But he can't tell anyone because it ruins the riddle.
Right.
Dr. Hugo Strange was the only person that's ever definitively figured it out.
I think Riddler figured it out at least once, and it was like, and Batman goes, but who are you going to tell? And the Riddler just breaks down when he realizes he can't tell anyone.
Well, I mean, Amanda Waller, I think, knows who he's Bruce Wayne too, because she kind of needles him like that. Okay, rich boy.
Well, no, I mean, people figure it out, but the thing is, like, that's why it's interesting that the Joker, his nemesis, like, if you pair them up, mm-hmm. that's who you think of. He doesn't want to know, because again, I remember one specific time in the comics where literally people capture him and he's like, do you want to be the one to unmask him? He goes, I don't want to know who he is. Why would I? it would ruin the game. You know, it's just like, that's what it is. Why would you? Like, I mean, and that's why in some ways Batman Forever is so infinitely frustrating that they show up at Bruce Wayne's house. Two-Face? Two-Face wouldn't want to know either. Like, in the comics, like, you even have this in other times where Two-Face is like, Bruce Wayne, I knew Bruce Wayne, he wouldn't be Batman. The guy's a rich kid.
Yeah, that literally happened. Yeah. I think in the animated series, somebody said it was Bruce Wayne and Two-Face is like, that fucking Playboy? Oh, sorry.
No, I mean, that's what it is. Like, that cartoon of a man? Like, he wouldn't bother himself.
Or how there are even times where Two-Face is like, no, not the Waynes. I remember the Waynes. The Waynes are good. Leave them alone.
Yeah, the Waynes are good people.
And you're like... So
well, but even Two-Face has that idea of justice.
Yes,
like it is so. Well, like that's the interesting thing.
Well, that's justice. Even that's the thing about Batman Forever is they screwed that aspect of Two-Face completely.
I mean, just look at what Bruce Timm and Paul Dini did, and one of the things they did in the series and kind of stepping away from the movie is there's a time where we find a third personality of Two-Face.
Yeah,
where he's like the judge.
Yeah,
and even and he sets up a trap for himself.
Yeah,
it's one of the most glorious. Like they delved into the characters in a different way than a lot of people that had come before them had never looked at, and did a great job exploring it in a children's animated series.
Yeah,
that sparked a generation of new comic readers that looked for something better and deeper than what came before, and.
Well, and at the end, that's why this is a brilliant comic series. It's not just that I love Batman, because I do, and I have the books and everything, but this animated show on WB, it's the afternoon show you tune in, does a great job that in 21 and a half minutes of telling you a story about someone where you care about characters, and it's still what I tell my kids in a history class. It's gray area. Nothing is right or wrong. And he feels bad about what he does a lot of the time because it's not straightforward. And the idea that Bullock, the one man who wants to catch him, is upset when he may have died because he died. You don't want to kill the person you want to catch. You want to catch them. Like this, there's a very complex network at play here, and it's fascinating.
It's like Gotham City is game theory,
Yes. It is. And the idea that there's this chaotic element floating around destroying the system is what frustrates Batman more than anything. Like, if the average person could walk down the road and be fine, if there was the mafia afoot, you just had to play the game, it seems like he would be fine with it in this version of him. Mm-hmm. It's the idea that someone's going around and disrupting that system that bothers him. That is fascinating.
Speaking of games, I love that sequence at the end. I was mentioning it while we were watching it tonight, that the Joker and Batman do battle in a giant sort of miniature Gotham of the future, and they're battling around like Mothra and Godzilla, the giant skyscrapers. But Gotham was their plaything at the moment. They were having a grand drama. It was like almost emblematic of that.
Yeah. And since Joker was in charge, the metaphor continues, because literally the planes and the cars were the ones attacking Batman. The city almost brings Batman down. Mm-hmm. Metaphor.
Whoa.
Right? I mean, and at the end, Joker has his world that he can control, but Andrea and Bruce are the ones who are in charge, which is even better. We've run circles around this. We've talked longer than an episode.
Do we ever see where in the show chronology does Mask of the Phantasm fall? Do we see the Joker alive afterward?
I think we do. Oh, no, he's not dead.
I'd have to look it up, but it's somewhere in the middle, I want to say.
Yeah, because we get references to the Joker with, what was it, a Return of the Joker?
And then new Batman started and Joker was still around.
Yeah,
I know. They changed the art style.
Because there is really no way that Andrew would not have killed the Joker at that point.
The Joker's died and come back so many times.
I'm sure she thought she had killed him in some way, but Joker has a way of
doing
that.
Maybe they got separated and everything blew up.
Exactly, yeah.
She'd finish him.
But she probably assumed so, because by the look of it at the end, she was kind of done with her vengeance. It was just an empty shell of a person.
I think this came out in like 93, and the show lasted until 96 or 97. So
the hits kept on coming.
Yeah.
Well, then 4
because he screwed up one of the Robins, and that Robin hadn't come yet.
Like, well, that's right.
Oh, yeah, because that's part of the movie in the same
Return of the Joker
series.
Yeah.
Yes.
The Return of the Joker is Batman Beyond. It's Sub-Zero. Sub-Zero is the same one.
Yeah.
But
But don't the two universes connect, I think?
Yeah, because Batman Beyond is 90-year-old Bruce Wayne training his successor. Yeah. And the scenes you're talking about in Return of the Joker.
Too, yeah.
Conroy's voice. Yeah.
Is Robin, is Tim Drake, because the first Robin was Nightwing and
he shows
Jason
up.
Todd was dead.
And once more, I love that a children's TV show actually goes for that also, the same dark storylines of, you know, twisting and confusing this kid.
It's on its own, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that as well. But I think we're out of time.
Yeah.
So we'll give our final thoughts. We'll just go around the horseshoe in reverse. Matt, what did you think?
Well, I wasn't totally sure if I was even going to come tonight because the Mask of Phantasm didn't really interest me. But the characterization, and it flows very well. It's never boring. And if I hadn't read the synopsis years ago, I've probably been shocked by the reveal that Andrea was the Phantasm.
Yeah.
And so I probably have liked it more.
Yeah.
So it's just really just surprisingly well done. I liked it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Matt. Thomas?
This sits in, my top, like, basically, I mean, there's not a ton of Batman movies, but sits in the upper end of my favorite Batman movies. This was fantastic. I love it as a kid. I still love it now. It's surprisingly, I mean, it holds up just as well as I remember. Yeah. It's wonderful. It's fun. It's Batman. Truly hit Batman right on the nose, and I love it.
Thank you. Cliff?
I've already shared a lot of my opinions here, and it's pretty obvious I share my emotions on my sleeve, and I'm filled with nostalgia when I talk about it, but I've already said it's my favorite incarnation of Batman. I think that was further along, as I mentioned, when they did the games. Everything comes together in this, and I mentioned Shirley Walker's score also is one of the ultimate Batman scores.
May she
I
rest
mean, that,
in
that
peace.
Opened that, oh, Narima, see the I actually, like, had that to wake up to a few times when I had a big day. It was like, nothing gets you going in the morning, like, hearing that. But no, everything about it, I absolutely loved it. Characters, everything came together. Full on night of nostalgia tonight. I enjoyed it.
So, Gregorian score, and it belongs on USA because characters were welcome.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what I was going for.
Cliff. Daniel.
I think this really turned more into a talk about the animated series as a whole, which is the one aspect that I think a lot of kids are missing out on today, because there's nothing that can replicate that. They're missing out on so much. It was an amazing show for everyone who saw it at the time, and we talked about a lot of reasons why. So this is a good jumping in point for kids that have never seen the show, and I highly recommend that they do so.
It's better than the most recent rendition of Teen Titans, so...
Oh, God.
Oh. I've seen some Batman shows from, like, the middle of the 2000s that are just the worst.
Yeah. I mean, I do like Jenny Kartenkowski, but, like, yeah, no, Teen Titans is too cartoony. I will say, so my thoughts before we wrap up here. I love Batman, hands down. He's one of my favorite people ever. You know, him and I are, you know, Facebook friends. But the thing about Batman is there's always that line you have to draw. There's bleakness versus cartooniness, right? Because he is this revenge tale. He turns into the Punisher at the drop of a hat because people were killed. He has no love left. He just seeks revenge. Or he's someone who has every tool at his disposal and he can solve any problem no matter how absurd, so let's make the problem more absurd. The Batman animated series is really good at towing that line where he is somehow semi-bulletproof and can get out of any scrape with a hookshot and a batarang. And the villains are sometimes crazy, and yet it's in a very real city, New York, Chicago proxy, that's dark and bleak, and there's pickpockets and snatch purses, and he has to deal with that. This movie shows that humanity, right? He does get bloodied, and he bloodies people back. And he's flawed in that way, which is rare for Batman. He doesn't lose his cool, but here he loses his cool. And you get that moment of rage where he has to back down, and Andrea steps in and has that rage, and she is the one who can't control it, and he doesn't know what to say because he's been there before.
Yeah, she's like a foil for him.
Very much so.
Oh, yeah.
You mean when Alfred literally is polishing foils at one scene?
I didn't even think about that.
Wow.
That was fantastic.
And Alfred looks the same, except at one point they colored his hair black instead of gray. I think this movie is good not because it's well put together, because it is. But like you were saying, like, the kids watch this animated series like I did, is they'll learn a little bit. Like, it shows the gray area, and yet you can understand it. I think that's important. It's hard to take complex morality, mythology, whatever, and make it relatable. This does that. It shows gray area in the power of what he is. I really liked it. In fact, I may revisit this before I revisit the third Chris Nolan movie. I like the third Chris Nolan movie more than most people because I recognize who he's referencing, David Harvey, but that doesn't make it a good movie. It makes it too highbrow. This takes high rhetoric and relates it to people. A gray area is a character. It takes a black and white character, makes him a gray area character, and that makes it intriguing.
It's a better origin story than Batman Begins. I'm just going to say it.
I wouldn't argue with you. It'd be hard for me to place which one I liked more of the two of them. However, we are out of time. This is one of the few times I'm going to call to you as an audience. If you liked us talking about this, there's another dozen animated Batman movies that we would talk about if people show interest. So reach out to me, because if you like it, we'll gladly come back to this pool.
All day.
All day. This well is deep, and we're ready for a swim. Thank you, guys. Tune in next week and every future week when we put another bit of your past on trial.
Myopia Defend Your Childhood is produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It's hosted by Nick Hoffman, produced and mixed by Ann Burns, and edited by Nick Hoffman. Our graphic designer is Scott Miller. The theme song is Caroline, written and performed by The Serenaders. Purchase their music through the Amazon link on dudeletter.com. Questions or comments? Please visit myopiapodcast.com or contact us through myopiapodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, at myopiapodcast and at dudeletter, and find us on our Facebook, Stitcher, and iTunes pages. And while you're on iTunes, please rate and review our podcast. It helps us out a lot. Want to give us money? Go to myopiapodcast.com/Amazon and purchase stuff like normal. Myopia gets a piece of the action.